listening to the Building Heroes podcast, which stands for Building Healthy, Energy Efficient, and Resilient Occupants, as an educational series. The Building Heroes podcast is proudly sponsored by Better Bricks and was created to help bridge the informational gaps that can occur between industry, academia, and experts in the industry doing this kind of work every single day. This podcast varies in topics per quarter and per year, generally featuring voices of industry experts and thought leaders in the fields of construction, design, technology, specialty trades, and skilled trades, as well as those who work in the humanities, energy efficiency, social science, and policy. If you want to learn more about Better Bricks, you can find them online at betterbricks.com, a commercial resource for energy efficiency. My name is Shelby Ruiz, and I am your host today for the Building Heroes podcast. Today, we have Carl England and Hui Li from Washington State University's Composite Materials and Engineering Center, and they are here today to talk to you about their wondrous world of wood products. Carl, would you like to start by introducing yourself?
Sure thing, Shelby. My name is Carl England. Like you mentioned, I'm faculty here at Washington State University. I got my start in the wood industry back in the early 90s, working for Truss Joyce McMillan, which is now Weyerhaeuser, being a technical director for a Paralam plant. And so I learned a lot about how to make composites and the aspects of making it in a manufacturing environment. And I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was good. And a lot of the product lines that we were focused on were in competition with glulam beams and other types of very large mass timber products. And so from that, I realized that I just kind of wanted to do more problem solving. I wanted to actually see how to fix this, how to do things better, how to do things next level. And that was kind of confining in the commercial world. And so I went back to university and got my degree and my PhD degree and started working at the Composite Materials and Engineering Center at Washington State University. To kind of sum up the work I do in a nutshell is dealing with low-value feedstock. You know, whether it's wood, natural fibers, or recycled composite materials or whatever, it's the materials that people really don't want to use, don't find a need for. And I think that's kind of what sums up what we're doing and the research we're doing and hopefully making a difference to the future.
That's great. Hui, would you like to introduce yourself and give me a little of your background?
Sure thing. Thank you, Shelby, for the invitation. So my name is Hui Li, as you mentioned. I'm also a faculty member here at WSU. And my background is like more like a straight academic, not like Carl, he's like working industry. I trained in wood science, technology, engineering for first my 10 years since like 2003. And you know, in wood science, wood composites, adhesives, chemistry. And after that, I started my postdoc in WSU, actually working with Carl for like recycling aerospace composites to kind of value-added stuff, you know. Yeah, so my research also in nutshell is kind of use like low-value feedstock to make it more valuable. For example, recycle wind turbine blade, recycle like aerospace materials, wood composites.
Good job, Lee. Thank you. Something that we should probably outline for our listeners here is, what is a composite and what is a polymer? And when you say low grade feedstocks, can one of you kind of describe that process of what those are and why you had to step in to do something about it?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things, if I look back on, you know, this whole, the recycling spectrum, how you deal with these materials once they serve their purpose, their end of life, or you're looking at industry byproducts, part of an industry, they make something and then all of a sudden they have this waste stream that comes off of it, industry recycled products and stuff. And the wood industry really was one of the first industries really do something with that. If you look at the particle board and the fiber board, it came from residues, all the residues from the sawmills and the planer mills and everything that made the wood components that we use in everyday life. Had all these residuals that were just all over the place. And so, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, they were just burning piles of sawdust. And then all of a sudden they realized, hey, there's some value to that. And that's where the particle board industry kind of got its start, was really looking at the residuals and the waste streams of an existing industry. And so we kind of took that same mantra and that same kind of goal with even more recycled or waste stream products. And that's where we kind of talk about these low value feedstocks, you know, the wood particles that you put into particle board or fiber board or anything like that that makes a composite that can be made from a wide variety of different materials. And that's where we look at the composites as far as aerospace, like we alluded to, aerospace, energy, the wind turbines, anything that basically doesn't have a home right now is what we kind of deal with. And so if you look at what a composite is and how we kind of put these things together, it's generally, you know, composite is a formation of more than two parts, two or more parts. And so what we do with composites in this regard is we do a lot of work with panel-based products that are like what you would see either as OSB in a house or particle board as an underlayment in a desk or a shelving unit or molding that you see in a house kind of thing. And so when you put those things together, it usually takes heat and pressure. The heat is there to then activate the resins that use the binders that hold everything together to make it that composite form. That ends up being the final product or the product that then is used downstream. When we talk about composites and composites recycling, we're actually trying to recycle those composites that are put together. So if you look at the aerospace industry and the carbon fiber and the glass fiber composites, which is a different classification really of composites, they're basically the same thing. They got resin in them, some type of binder, and some type of fiber. It's just that they're a little bit higher end for different applications, but they still don't have a lot of potential for recycling. And so we've been dealing with breaking these things down into usable forms, like we said, into a feedstock that we can use. And since they're no real use for these things, it's a low value feedstock because it's somebody else's garbage. And so we basically deal a lot with other people's garbage, try to turn it back into a feedstock that's readily available for a variety of different, either a composite, a firewood pellet, or a energy pellet, or whatever you want to talk about, or something that can be then converted into another product.
Thank you. So we're dealing with fibers, heat, pressure, and we are combining them into something else. Hui, I know your area of expertise being a little bit more scientific of a background. Do you want to talk about polymers and the difference between what a composite and a polymer is in this kind of logic?
Polymer means like many segments. And layers means polymer. So it's made up of a lot like single units of stuff. For example, glucose, and then like you talk about like cellulose or like cotton. You know, cotton is made of glucose. Glucose is one unit, and cotton is like the polymer. The cellulose is polymer. Another example is protein, and the amino acid is a single unit, and then protein is polymer. So. And you know, polymer also like comprised of thermoplastic or thermoset polymers. And you know, as Carl just mentioned about like those binders for the wood composites, actually those kind of thermoset polymer. So which means when it's set, cured, it cannot go back to its original form. Another form is thermoplastic. That means like a plastic, you can, you know, you heat it up back and forth, so you still can change their like a shape. The example of that is kind of, for example, polyethylene or polypropylene, like your like water bottles or plastic wraps, those kind of things, they're more like thermoplastics. Yeah, you can heat it up and kind of reform it. That's kind of basic like a polymer it is.
Is the true difference between composite and polymer just the difference on a molecular level?
If you look at the resin that we use, so we use a variety of different type of resins that we can use for heat to cross-link them and put them together. That would be like what Dr. Lee said is a thermoset composite. It's kind of like baking a cake. You bake it up, you get mixed around, and once you bake it, you can't go back to the original ingredients. It's cooked, it's ready to go kind of thing. That would be a thermoset type of polymer, let's put it that way. Polymer is kind of the general classification of resins and binders and different types of products that have repeating MERs or repeating units. So polyethylene is many ethylenes. Polypropylene is many propylenes. Polystyrene, you get the idea. That ends up being the difference between a thermoset and a thermoplastic, in the sense that a thermoplastic can be heated and reheated, and it has this thermal responsive behavior that it turns into a different form. You take a plastic bag and you melt it down, you can turn it whatever you want to because it becomes very malleable at that time. You do the same thing with a thermoset, it just burns. And so it doesn't go back, it doesn't change. And so that's the main difference between a thermoset and a thermoplastic.
Okay.
All.
There's a lot that goes into these decisions that you're making and the different kind of testing that you're doing. How do you actually decide what is something to test or something to make a composite out of, or what is actually the driver behind that?
That's a very good question. So if you look at, a lot of the work that we've done in the past has been with wood plastic composites. We've been working on those for 25 years, basically here. And with that process, it uses a thermoplastic material as the binder or the matrix resin to hold everything together. And it goes through a different type of processing method. And a lot of the thermoplastics you'll see are either extruded or injection molded or some type of forming that is typical with the plastics industry. And so if you look at a waste stream or a feedstock that's going into these different products or different applications, it's really hard to tell. Do I put it into a panel and compress it and make it a particle board panel like kind of product, or do I break it down and turn it into a thermoplastic-based product as a filler or fiber reinforcement? And it really kind of depends upon your end-use application. If you want to make decking material or fencing material or some type of two-dimensional element that is long and lineal and it has a unique shape or profile to it, then you probably want to do a thermoplastic extruded or injection molded part. If you just want to make a panel out of it for a desk or, enter into those kind of markets for OSB sheathing or plywood kind of thing, then you're going to want to do a flat press thermoset based process. And so with that being said, it really kind of dictates on what you have as a feedstock that can then allow you to go into these different types of applications.
Yeah, another example I can say is like a, for example, carbon fiber reinforced composites. So you use bike frames, airplane. Without resin or thermoset resin, carbon fiber itself will be no use. It's just kind of some fibers. So just people think, okay, make a composites with carbon fiber and epoxy resin. So these two things to combine together so the epoxy resin can transfer load of the carbon fibers. So the carbon fiber works that way to be very strong, stable materials like that.
And
Got
that's
it.
a good point, Hui. We're looking for a number of different qualities from whatever it is that you're making, right? Whether that's functionality and outdoor decking and waterproofing, and it requires a certain kind of material for that versus trusses or the surface of our desk or other kinds of things. You're really kind of looking to fill a certain quality, whether that's structural or aesthetic, or the fact that it exists as a surface to paint and make look nice.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. It's really, when you design a composite, you don't just design it as a blank and say, oh, here, let's go find something to do with it. You design it based upon its end use effort. Where is it going to go? I was just talking to a colleague just a little bit ago, and we talked about how pallets are made. And you would think, well, you want to have really strong, stiff, and structurally sound pallets, but a lot of times, forklifts run into pallets and people kick them. And so you want to have a lot of ductility. You need to have that toughness. Well, that toughness isn't always conducive for making it very stiff and strong and cheap all at the same time. So you have to kind of balance out what your properties, end use applications are going to be to then design your properties of your composite. And it's not an easy task to just sit there and just blanket saying, oh, this is going to work for all these different applications. You have to know where it's going to go, and you have to be smart about it. And that's where the design and the engineering for composites come in.
What other forms of applications for your composites or polymer types of research have you guys participated in?
Yeah, so as we're talking about, we're trying to use like a low value feedstock to make like a value added product. either from like a wood industry, for example, from like wood sawdust particles, and then we can make like wood particle board, like MDF, which is medium density fiber board, or even veneer like a plywood, which can be used in the furniture, siding, that kind of applications. And for like wood plastic composites, we can use that for decking board and for recycling like carbon fiber or like glass fiber composites. It can also be used like into non-structural like interior applications or like even exteriors applications. Depends upon end use.
Being an interior designer and having some experience working in framing specifically, I know a lot of like trim work and the more finer details and interiors are most often composite wood materials of some form or another. So it seems like composites are really kind of stepping in to not only reduce the cost of certain kinds of materials, but also make more durable, flexible options for different kinds of applications. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, that's where composites really got their start, really. And if you look at where plywood is one of the first wood composites we ever had. And it started back in the 1940s, and it was right during World War II. And it mainly became a replacement for wood slats for ammo boxes and shipping containers and all that kind of stuff for the war efforts. And so they came up with these better ideas to make more of a panel assembly. And that really kind of changed how you looked at wood. It wasn't wood is just going to be this 2x4 or 2x6 or 1x whatever that you put together. All of a sudden, boom, you had this sheet of 4x8 or whatever you wanted size kind of thing that you could then make a box out of, or you could make a shelf out of, or you could make whatever you wanted to. IKEA could buy thousands of them and make furniture out of them kind of thing. And so it really, the composite side of this is really truly an engineered feat in the sense that you're looking at not just making what's available to you out of a tree. You're taking that material and then putting it into something else and putting it in a form that can be used a lot easier and shipped a lot easier. Flat panels ship a lot easier than other air voided or volumetric kind of products kind of thing. But if you look at what we've worked on in the past, we have had all types of agricultural fibers and residues, wheat straws, rice straws, knaf, hemp, you name it, all the different types of fibers. We've had carpet fibers, we've had coconut husk, we've had, like we mentioned, recycled wind turbine blades, we've had aircraft parts, we've had everything and anything in this lab that we've looked at as far as how do we do something with it. And that's where it kind of comes down to that decision tree that we talked about. Do we put it into a product that is extrudable or injection moldable plastic using the background? Or do we make it into a panel? Or do we go it into a three-dimensional panel? Or how do we deal with this product? And it really comes down to what it is and where you want it to go.
You have a lot of knowledge in your brain about the molecular level or the chemistry level of the certain different fibers or different kinds of materials.
So,
You're
like,
making
think
informed
about.
decisions, is my question, on your
Yeah.
scientific level.
Yeah. And a lot of it, I'll just step in here kind of thing. A lot of this really is based upon how it comes to you. If it's already ground up in a small chunk or it's, we've had garbage from lots of different places and it's already kind of in a form, you already got it. And so there's not much you can do with that. If somebody sends you a waste product that's a sheet of material or a fiber or something, then you got some other options that you can do with it. And so a lot of times, our decision matrix is not only just a chemistry decision, but it's also what does it look like when it comes in? And how varied is it at the front end? Can we deal with it? Because our goal really is to turn it into a consistent feedstock. That feedstock then goes into these other products and these other processes. And to get it into these other processes, it's got to be pretty uniform in shape and size.
And you're also dealing, I've heard you mention a number of different times when you get different kinds of feedstocks in, levels of contamination or outside kinds of things. We talk about replacement of certain elements in concrete all of the time that will totally make the concrete not work. And I'm sure it's the same kind of deal in your composite polymer world, right? Where if you don't have completely pure materials to start with, that's going to be a problem. How do you handle that when you're already dealing with already used or recycled waste?
That's a key question right there. And that's where That's where traceability and accountability of the material is crucial, because if you don't know where it came from, and this has to do with either, virgin materials that come in off the land or extracted out of the ground, or recycled materials. And you have to have a legacy, you have to have a carbon accounting of where that material has been and what are you getting. Not only for, the final product properties and performance, but also for safety and issues of anybody working with this and dealing with it. And so that's got to be first and foremost.
Let's talk about some of the more of the testing and actually making a product that you guys do. Let's say that somebody comes to you and they want to build a product. Maybe it's a CLT board or CLT panel. What does that process actually look like with you guys? And what are some of your capabilities as far as from manufacturing something to see if it works all the way to actually testing its strength or durability once it's actually built?
So, we do quite a few different types of research development attributes here at the lab. And a lot of this can be done through traditional sponsored research, like from USDA, NSF, DoD, those kind of entities. But we also do quite a bit that comes from industry, where we work on trying to help them solve problems or solve issues that they may have in their process, and help them along. And so that's where a lot of the testing comes into play. If you're going into the built environment, into a building, you got to meet codes and standards and specifications on that, as we test things out according to the standards that are developed for that particular application and use kind of thing. And so we do quite a bit of that here at the lab. One of the things that we've gotten into here recently quite a bit is the cross-laminated timber world, or the CLT, mass timber, or however you want to classify it. We've always done quite a bit of work with wood, and the fact that CLT and mass timber was really making a movement really kind of fit in real well with what we like to do and what our strengths are at right now. And so we actually started, it was quite a few, probably 2016 or so, started working with Mercer Mass Timber. But they came to us and they really wanted to figure out how to build and design a plant. And it was a really good relationship between industry and academia, where industry really wanted to kind of build their manufacturing facility for CLT. They wanted to design that and get things going. And it worked out really well that WSU had a lot of experience and expertise in the area of wood and wood composites, that we helped out a lot on the design of the plant. And then we took it a step further, and they actually sent part of their press and part of their glue line and part of their planer system to get the lam stock ready to go for CLT, all down at WSU. And the reason they did that was primarily twofold. One was to train the workforce. And so we did a lot of work. We had quite a few different folks from Mercer that were at the lab trained to then be able to go into the plant and get things moving once it started. And so the whole time while they were building the plant and getting things going, we were training the workforce, and then we were also making panels that would then be tested and evaluated. And since it's the same process and the same press and the same everything down at WSU, we could then classify that as code accepted material. And so we got a chance to then do all the panel making for them to kind of get the code approvals process going. And so when they opened up the door and they got the plant going, they didn't have to do much testing at all. And it helped them facilitate and get things moving a lot quicker as far as selling usable product out the door.
Do you have anything from your carbon fiber kind of projects that you think is worth sharing here as far as your process of assessing a project from start to finish?
Yeah, so Carl and I work on a few like a carbon fiber recycling projects. Even like my first project, like a pursuing postdoc here, was recycling carbon fiber from aerospace industry, actually using the thermoplastic carbon fiber reinforcement, which is like a PEEK or ether or ketone to kind of, this material is actually very expensive. You talk about like a 12 inches by 12 inches, like a quarter inch thickness will cost like a few $100. But they just like probably like a take like a three quarters of the materials, and then at least kind of quarter of the materials will be dumped into landfill. So we're trying to recycle that into another form, which is also kind of panels, but we grind it and then reheat it and then form it to make the panel as well. So we brought this panel back to their original assembly facilities. So then this can kind of make the exactly same parts because this part is not structural part, so it can be replaced. So that's kind of, what we call the kind of closed loop thing from like a recycled parts, and then they can go back to their original application. So it's one example. And now we also kind of recycle thermal set carbon fiber composites, which is epoxy based. From that, we grind that up and then use that a filler, or we call it functional filler to reinforce like polyolefins, for example, polyethylene or polypropylene composites. And then just kind of from here, we try to kind of generate a very uniform feedstock called pellets. From pellets, you can use that to kind of either injection mold it to different parts or some other applications, for example, in automotive industry or whatever, end user will use that for. Two kind of areas we have that car, right?
Yeah, we also
And
did, when you look at the carbon fiber recycling, which we did quite a bit of, we worked with a very large aerospace manufacturer on the west side of the state on looking at how do we use these carbon fiber waste stream materials as reinforcement in pavements. And so we did quite a bit of work on making pervious pavements where you allow water to go through it and you don't basically have to develop a drain system for it. So we looked at not only the performance and the process of making it, but also how does it affect waterfowl and water organisms, kind of thing like that. So it was a pretty good project that really kind of showed the focus of how we could take a waste stream out of one company and put it into a different product line.
What does using a composite material in a building, say maybe CLT, do for a project's overall sustainability?
It increases it dramatically because of the fact that you're utilizing a carbon storage device. If you look at a tree, it sucks in carbon and it becomes a storage unit that, if you use it, it actually entices or enhances that carbon storage even more, kind of thing. And so being able to use timber instead of steel, which consumes a lot of carbon, to then make it really pencils out to be quite nice and quite effective as far as a carbon accounting a picture.
You've already mentioned a number of bio-based products and wood products and fibers. Do you guys do anything with sheet metal or metal scraps and waste in manufacturing?
Not a whole lot. We do have some metals that are part of structures that we deal with, but we don't do a lot with recycling metals at all. So what's really kind of interesting is, if you look at the recycling sector, has been around for a long time, and where it started was with metals. And most of the metals, whether it be in Asia or whether it be in America, or whether it be in Europe, where they manufacture steel, and a lot of it is recycled base, is they're using old rebar, old cans, or whatever kind of thing like
Right.
that, to then
Well,
put it
metal's a
into
little
the
bit
product.
different because you can melt it back into each other for the most
Yeah,
part.
and it kind of works in that realm a little bit easier. And it's also easier to ship because it's heavy and you can weight it out pretty quick and you can make it very efficient and very, very cost effective. The other thing is you got to look at how much energy has gone into getting that metal. Let's say a tin can, or let's say aluminum beer can or soda can or whatever kind of thing. 95% of the energy to get it to that point is already there. So all that includes all the extraction, that includes the refinement, all the mining attributes of it, and then putting it in a processor. So you could take that can and just throw it back into a system, and you only have to consume 5% of the carbon to make that thing up. It ends up being very logical, not only on the accountability as far as environmentally, but also economically. It's just kind of makes sense. So that's why we've done it for such.
This is a kind of big picture topic I wasn't anticipating us coming to in this conversation, if I'm being honest, but I think it's really timely as far as considering our consumption and the disposability of certain kinds of things, whether that's our everyday water bottles or our building materials, and use what we have more effectively. before we have to rip it all apart and try to figure out how to reuse it again is probably the best way to approach this, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree 100% with you, Shelby, is that we have to learn how to be more efficient in our processing. And a lot of that, you know, if you look at some of the carbon fiber stories we talked about, you know, we're not even dealing with end of life products. We're just dealing with waste scrap. And they're at maybe a 30% rejection rate of material. And so, you know, you get a sheet of carbon fiber and you want to fit it into some particular size, and you got to cut off a bunch of stuff and everything, all that gets wasted out. And that's all material that, you know, is good material. It's just kind of cut because the form doesn't fit it well, kind of thing. And so, you know, how do we improve on those kind of things? How do we get away from that? How do we reduce down our own processing scrap and just look at that as an industry? And then you do the same thing in your own home. And as a consumer, how do I not make such a big impact and not consume as much carbon as I do?
That's a really good point of how can we actually improve our manufacturing and creation processes to have less waste in the first place. You know, I think this is very timely. So I'm glad that we came to that conclusion together. If people want to learn more about you, we can find you on the cmec.wsu.edu website.
Oh yeah, they can definitely look at our website and see the different things we do online. And they can definitely feel free to contact myself or Dr. Lee if they have any questions about products or anything they want to necessarily deal with as far as building materials in their built environment or wherever they happen to be working, kind of thing. So that's not a problem at all. Takeaway out of this, I taught a lot of different lectures and different things about recycling and utilizing materials and everything like that. I think the big thing that I would really like people to take away from when looking at these things and looking at how difficult and how hard it is to recycle some of the things is that we have to learn to design for deconstruction. We have to be able to look at a product and say, I'm not building this product just for its use right now. I got to look at how I can take this thing apart or how I can reuse it or how I can look at its total life frame and say, this is how I'm going to design it because it's not just for this application. It's not just a cup or a straw that you use in a consumable good. It's going to have a lifetime. And what can I do with it after that fact? And I think that's got to be one of the things that, you know, I know for myself has been frustrating as can be, is to look at how many different things we put into our products and make it so difficult to recycle them. And that's one of the main reasons why a lot of people are kind of down on recycling right now, is because the fact is, you know, we're capturing what can be easily recycled right now. And that's easy. We know how to recycle bottles and jugs and nice, clean, uncontaminated plastic. It's not a problem. It's all the other stuff. It's all the different letterings and different layers and different pigments and everything that you put into all these different products that cause a lot of problems downstream when you try to recycle. So design for deconstruction.
And then eventually with mass timber and stuff, that deconstruction looks a lot different. But I understand with recycling and everything, you know, it's sometimes it's those polymers and it's those glues that you can't re-extract back out. And that's ultimately what you guys are trying to solve, right?
Yeah, it's definitely on our list of things that we do and dealing with, you know, the thermal sets and the different types of resins that are used out there, finding some bio-based alternatives than the synthetic based materials that are out there right now is a big front for not only us, but a lot of the companies we work with, and looking at how do we make these things even more successful? How do you make them usable? And how do you get their performance up is a big part of our agenda.
Lee, what are your closing thoughts?
Yeah, so there's like a three big R's for like you know, the recycle economy. There's a reduce, reuse, and recycle. So if you can like use it of your materials, go ahead. And otherwise, try to reuse it. And then in last regard, it's kind of recycle. So try to not like directly dump your stuff into the landfill or that kind of things. But you know, there's always stuff you have to kind of recycle, or I have to, I know, always have to kind of dump that in the landfill or that kind of thing, stuff. But we have to kind of figure out a way to recycle these materials. This kind of our expertise come to play, how use like materials, like expertise to see how we can kind of engineer or like integrated landfill materials into, value-added product.
You can find Building Heroes on anywhere that you stream podcasts or music, including Apple, Google, Spotify, and you can find us on RSS. All of our companion documents are available to anybody who is listening on our website at idcl.wsu.edu/building-heroes-podcast.